Hello, everybody. This is your host of Love, Lust, and Laughter, Dr. Diana Wiley. And I'm so glad to have my buddy, my friend, Brad Coates. And he's a divorce lawyer from Hawaii and a friend of many, many years. I have a question for you, Brad, right off the top. Because many people have wondered if we'll emerge from quarantine with a divorce boom or a baby boom or both. And I've read that lawyers believe, and this is a question for you, that the rate of divorce filings will rise, and not just as a direct result of being homebound for months on end, because there are the usual financial stressors and addiction issues that are often fodder for divorce. Right, Brad?
Divorce rates will indeed rise out of this. From a divorce lawyer's perspective, it's going to be tricky because a lot of people are going to have a lot of problems, but a lot of people are going to have a lot less money to pay lawyers. So let's hope that they're uncontested divorces because, like I say, a lot of people are going to be unhappy and a lot of people are going to be broke, and that's not a good combination. I've got it broken down into a couple of different categories. When I lecture on divorce, I talk about the three main causes that I see causing it, you know, all the time. I've been doing this for 40 years, as you know, and I've seen it all. The biggest causes of divorce are money, sex, and family. Money, either too much or too little. People get a little cute when they got too much money, and when they're broke, they got real problems. Sex, sometimes, you know, not enough inside the marriage or too much outside. And family, how do you deal with extended family, stepkids from prior marriages, meddling in-laws, different parenting styles, all those kind of things. Out of those three categories, two of them are bound to get hit worse out of this virus. There's going to be a lot less money. People are going to be totally stressed financially. Families are going to be cloistered in together and forced to hunker down in small spaces with kids with runny noses and one parent having lost a job and the rent coming due. There's going to be a rise in intergenerational families, just like there was during the last recession of 2008, where, you know, all the millennials wound up living in their parents' basements. That's going to start to happen again. It's going to get up close and personal with a lot less money, and it's going to, you know, it's going to be a definite stress causer, which will probably cause more divorces, which is ironic in some ways, because it's been proven that some of the biggest benefits of marriage come in managing high stress times. The biggest marital benefits come in high stress environments when people who are married can handle, you know, at least midlife stress better than those who aren't. Marriage may be the most important when there is stress in life, but it's also the most challenged. Sorry, I ran on a little bit there, but you get
No, it's very true. And, you know, talking is the most dangerous thing people do, especially when they are stressed. And, well, I think just listening to your partner really listening is the most infrequent thing people do, especially when they're stressed. So from a psychological point of view and a relationship counseling point of view, we've really got to get people to really listen. And there, but I want to hear a little bit more about what's going on in Hawaii because. You're an island, there are many things happening in Hawaii that will happen on the mainland too, maybe bigger. But tell me about what's happening specifically in Hawaii. In our phone call yesterday, we talked about more domestic violence, and of course, less money is really a problem. You know, in terms of. Well, answer the question, and then we'll go on.
Well, Hawaii's got kind of an interesting dichotomy. We've got some of the fewest cases and some of the fewest fatality rates of any state in the country. We have a big ocean that serves as a moat around us. They cut off all tourism, which precluded the likelihood that people were going to bring the virus into the state. It also precluded the fact that anybody was going to bring any money into the state. Our economy is, 70 to 80% based on tourism and people coming into Hawaii. So, we had to cut it off in order to protect against the virus, but we've killed our economy. So we've got the least amount of problems, one of the least amount of problems of any states as far as the medical aspect of it, and yet one of the worst problems. Us in Nevada, especially Las Vegas, are projected to be the worst two hit areas of the country as far as the economic recovery or lack of recovery, because we're going to get hammered so hard for tourism. So it's a tricky time over here.
Yes, yes. So then we have, I heard that one lawyer said, I think the fallout financially is going to be worse than in 2008. People were divorced and still living together because they couldn't sell the house or afford to get a place to live. It's going to be worse this time for reasons like Hawaii is experiencing and Nevada, and so it's really it can be very depressing, and it's transformed relationships, and well, we're not going to talk so much about that this today, but dating and sex. Weddings have been postponed.
Transformed it all.
Yep. Yeah. And what about in Hawaii, in China, when the crisis eased, divorces went up?
Like I say, there's going to be pent-up demand for divorces, and marriage was already on the decline. Childbirth may be on the decline. I mean, realistically, it's going to be interesting when you talk about sex. I mean, the people that are locked up and have more time to themselves because they're not working, may find themselves spending time in the bedroom, and we could see a burst of corona babies come forth, a year from now. Who knows? But it's also possible that we could see a further drop in an already declining birth rate, because it's not just the husband and wife in the bedroom. It's it's the three kids that are also at home. There's not a lot of time for intimacy. And like I say, people are going to be, more irritable potentially just in general. So I don't know whether we're going to see a further drop in an already declining birth rate or a bit of a baby boom. I mean, after periods of crisis, think of World War II and the baby boom that followed after that. The soldiers came home from World War II, like my father. He was just happy to be alive. They wanted nothing more than a house in the suburbs and a backyard barbecue and a swimming pool and a couple of kids. That was, that was the baby boom. And that's what started the boomer generation that you and I are part of. So stress, once a period of stress ends, there can be a real excitement about, going back to familial stuff. But until then, it could be that more stress is going to cause more problems. So, And the cost of rearing kids is insane nowadays. So, people are going to do the math. They're going to be living in their parents' garages again, not able to physically afford a home or raise a family. It could cut both ways.
Yes, it's not a very promising picture, is it? I see that with my teletherapy. I'm seeing a lot of clients on Zoom. Quarantine is an amazing opportunity to better your marriage through therapy, but a lot of people aren't willing to put in the work. And so those people that aren't willing to put in the work will continue to want to get a divorce. And are you hearing from people that... or your firm, are you hearing from people that are just going crazy, quarantined together, and they want to know what they can do as soon as they can do it, in terms of getting separated?
Yeah, we're getting calls all the time about people really that have had enough. I mean, when I mentioned the three big causes of divorce, money, sex, and family, a fourth one is really communication, which you just touched on. And that's something that women are much better at and much more insistent about than are men. Men are notorious for their inability to really effectively communicate. And I think women probably sitting at home with a husband who just grunts all the time, and they watch that happen 24/7. I mean, when you think about it, you know, men's entire social interaction oftentimes hinges around their jobs. I mean, that's basically what men have got going. Women have got the junior league, they've got book clubs, they've got, you know, social organizations all the time that keep them going. Guys, it's a lot of time, it's just, you know, what did I do today at work? And they, you know, if they don't have much to report, and they're not very good at dealing with some of the serious issues that the women are wanting to communicate about, that could be another major gap between the genders that gets exacerbated.
And for couples like this, the quarantine, months-long quarantine, can be nothing short of a nightmare. And some couples are doing it pretty well, but others are just going insane. You know, you have people who are stressed out and panicked and emotionally traumatized as it is, and then you have the added layer of stress of not getting along with your spouse, and you've 24/7. I heard one say that one of my clients, the first day of our lockdown in Washington State, where I am, my significant other had already told me that he hated me. That's
wow.
That's a difficult way to start being cooped up with somebody.
Knowing your spouse that you hate him is not the best approach to starting communication. That's for sure.
No,
and using the word divorce, using those harsh words, you know, I hate you, or you know, I think you know you're ugly, or you're old, or you're fat, or you know, any of those pejorative terms are problematic. And the other one that you really don't want to hear is divorce. You don't ever want to start threatening using the word divorce as a threat unless you're really ready to go ahead with it, because, you know, you're halfway there. As soon as anybody starts seeing that kind of instability in the relationship, everybody gets more nervous. So people have got to choose their words carefully, and there's going to be a lot more time to be talking, and people are going to say the wrong things, just like you said. I hate you is a bad start.
Oh, it's a really bad start. I encourage couples in general to cool it with a criticism. I don't know, the right time to point out mistakes is almost never, but mid-crisis, oh, it's a really difficult time. So I think it's important for people to look at what their partners are doing right and express appreciation for it. That's been a big part of my counseling with couples, is to show appreciation. A lot of people forget to do that. You know, thank your spouse for making coffee, even if it's for the 500th time. Thank them. So I think it's a great time to cool it with criticism and maybe start to improve the relationship.
Go ahead.
No, it's just...
It's an interesting time because, you know, all the trends until recently with the gray divorces, the baby boomers getting divorced, everybody, a lot of, you know, aging spoiled yuppies that have had things going their way all through their lives. When you think about it, you know, people yours and my age, you know, we could get into college. We could graduate without $250,000 of student loan debt. We could go out and find a job. In fact, there were recruiters on campus. We could get a job. We could buy a house. We could have families. We could do all that kind of stuff. And these subsequent generations are going to get hammered. I mean, the key time, when you think about it economically, the key time for these millennials and the Gen Xers, it's your 30s, your 40s, your 50s. That's when you get out there and social network around. It's when you build your career. It's when you make things happen as far as your future development. And you know, all that's going to get delayed. All these people are, you know, you got half the country being jobless for the next couple of years. Holy shit. I mean, you know, what's that going to do to these people's ability to get their lives started? What's it going to do to the economy when people can't afford to buy houses? What's that do to real estate? I mean, this is going to be a real problem. And what was happening before was we were getting so spoiled that we wanted everything to be our way. Right now, as of last year, 28% of people were saying that they preferred permanent singlehood. They didn't want to be married. They didn't want to have a partner. They didn't want to have somebody else even sharing a bathroom. That statistic in 1952 was 9%. So it's like triple the number of people thinking that they've got so many different options, so many spoiled lifestyles over the years as we've all sort of, you know, grown up in this fortuitous period of the post-war, and versus the solace of having a partner during a time of crisis, which is really when people should be hunkering down and depending all the more on your partner. But we were getting pretty far away from that. We had the highest percentage of people not getting married, not having kids, not even living in the same house with anybody else that had ever emerged in society because it got so affluent. And we kind of lost the ability to toughen up and deal with some of these things. And now we're going to try to go through it alone if we're still single or if we've gotten divorced or whatever, and that's going to make it even trickier.
It's alarming, all of the trends that seem to be here now. But I want to go back to what you just said. Some people are opting for permanent singlehood. Now, I think that's true, and we're seeing there's a real change in for our single listeners out there. You know this. That online dating is very different now, and it actually, I have some single clients that I've been counseling with, and actually having more of a foundation of getting to know somebody back and forth without physically meeting can be a plus if you really get to know somebody. We're getting off track.
Especially if you're a good communicator. I think that's a great mm-hmm. point. You know, mm-hmm. people who can communicate well, that's going to sort out the wheat from the chaff. You're not, you know, it's not just going to be, you know, getting enamored with somebody's physical appearance because you're not going to actually get to see them. You're going to have to see how they talk, how they communicate. So that's going to be an interesting change for what had become this phenomena of online dating. And it's going to be interesting to see how that transpires now.
Yes, I absolutely agree. And then we have the problem with some people having affairs, and now they can't see the person that they were having the affair with. And one of my clients who had, she said, I think that his bad behavior over these years had to do with the fact that he was having an affair, and I really didn't know about it, but then I found out about it. And she said, now have a little extra attention in our relationship, and she said, sometimes when he goes to the grocery store a lot, I think he's actually going on FaceTime with his amour that he can't see anymore. It's a problem. It's a problem, but some couples are willing to work at it and do the communication thing. Let's get back to... do you have a particular case that you'd like to talk about? I have a couple more that I'd like to talk about that reflect some of the things that are going on right now. You mentioned to me on the phone that one of the problems that you're seeing, and we don't talk about it enough, is domestic violence.
Well, domestic violence is a huge problem, and it's probably going to get huger. I mean, you know, one mm-hmm. of the if you talk to any of the experts for the domestic violence hotline, the women support groups, these kind of things, you know, one of the first things they say is distance yourself from the abuser. They have, you know, they have safe houses in this town, and I'm sure most towns, for women who are, you know, are being physically abused by their spouse. Now, if you can't get out of the house, that makes that putting that physical distance is you know, virtually impossible. And the domestic violence hotlines are very concerned about that, of course. And you know, if you're trapped in the same house, there's more things to get pissed off about. You know, everything from like you said, who made the bad coffee can suddenly, instead of praising your spouse for it, it can be something to chastise your spouse about. And the next thing you know, you're throwing the pitcher of the pot of hot coffee at him. You know, holy cow, that can get out of control fast.
I read that in California, in the last 2 weeks, the calls about domestic violence have doubled. And
that would not surprise me.
Yeah, and so this one lawyer in California said, unfortunately, in a dysfunctional relationship, a lot of times there's an element of domestic violence. Basically, all the calls we're getting from people looking to hire us have been domestic violence related. We've had people hire us this week just to help us get a restraining order.
That's huge.
This is in California, where there are strict, there are strict protections around domestic violence, which means restraining order.
The firm I run here in Honolulu is called Coates, Frye, Tanimoto, and Gibson, and we're the biggest divorce and family law firm in the state. And you talked about the book I wrote called Divorce with Decency. Not everybody divorces with decency. Some people do it with real indecency. And what's happened here is that the courts, they're social distancing too, and they've shut down a lot of the various court calendars, you know, to try and process a standard divorce settlement through court. That's been shut down through the end of May here. The one calendar they've still got running, and what we're getting most of our calls for in the Coates, Frye, Tanimoto, Gibson law firm is all has to do with TROs, temporary restraining orders, for domestic violence. And that's one calendar that the court has kept going. We actually go in every week now for restraining orders all the time. So that's probably the mainstay of our ongoing business right now as our divorce cases sort of seize up. The domestic violence cases are probably our biggest source of cases right now.
That's really sad, isn't it? It's sad. You just think about how many people are just so stressed and so beside themselves and feel in danger. With mediation and are you trying to create effective solutions with private judges to do the mediation?
Oh, yeah. That's I've been a trained mediator. I'm a certified mediator and have been since the mid-80s. And actually, the Divorce with Decency title of my book started out as the title of my mediation clinic. So we do all kinds of mediation. I've done hundreds of mediations. And right now, when you think about it, with the courts being closed, you know, that's one of the few channels that you can actually move cases forward on. Mediation's an outside third party most of the time. So a lot of courts, have it as an adjunct to their court calendars too. But most of the time, you're using private mediators, and that can actually move forward. So yes, there's been a big uptick in mediation for smart people that want to keep things moving. What I was going to say about the domestic violence, which of course becomes if you got domestic violence, it's kind of a non-starter for mediation. Couples going into mediation have to do it voluntarily. They both have to agree to it, and they both have to be willing to communicate with one another. So it's great for people that are, on the upper end of the spectrum as far as communication and and, you know, a level playing field as far as understanding finances and everything like that. But for people that just want to, like I say, throw the coffee pot across the room instead of go to a mediator, you've got a different problem. And I've run that firm for over four decades now. I used to just hire lawyers that, you know, understood the tax consequences of property settlements and real estate transactions and, you know, the kind of divorce-related issues. Now I mainly hire young prosecutors and public defenders because the TRO calendar has become such a huge element, the restraining orders, such a huge element of our cases that they've almost quasi-criminalized family law. Because along with a restraining order, oftentimes comes an award of custody. If somebody's beating on his wife, he loses custody of his kids. So there's a real crossover between what used to be straight family law is now, like I say, quasi-criminal. It's weird.
This is kind of depressing.
Well, let's talk about depression. Let's talk about depression for a second.
Yeah.
In America, this is an interesting statistic I pulled up as I was getting ready for your show.
Good. Let's talk about depression.
Depression for adult Americans peaks during people's 40s, with the single peak year being 44. Ironically, people get happier as they get older. You know, the stress of career and marriage and everything else, and whether you're doing as well as, you know, your buddy next door or whatever. Apparently in U.S., depression peaks at age 44. You know what the median age of U.S. employees is? The median age for people that are employed in the United States currently is 42. So think of that. Think of that. Everybody that's working is right around that cluster. Not everybody, obviously, but I mean the largest group cohort is around that cluster of 42 years old. They've all been laid off from their jobs, not all, but a lot of people have been laid off from their jobs, certainly here in Hawaii. That's why we're getting hammered. Any service industries, you know, all that, you know, retail, all that stuff's pulled it down completely. So now you got people that are average age 42 employed getting laid off from their jobs, and depression peaks at 44. So that's going to be a really tough time statistically for people whose careers have been delayed. It's going to widen the gap. I mean, another huge aspect of this is going to be that the gap between the haves and the have-nots in society is going to be dramatically widened. People lose their job. They lose their medical insurance. They haven't got medical insurance. They're more likely to get we've seen that, how some areas of the urban populace, some racial divides, blacks, Hispanics getting disproportionately affected by the coronavirus. You know, people without medical insurance have got a real problem. You don't have insurance, you don't go to the doctor. You stay home and try and tough it out yourself. That means you probably are infecting your neighbors. And, you know, so you've got people on the coast, you know, Silicon Valley, the titans of finance in New England and Manhattan. They're all computer literate. They can work from home. They're going to be able to keep going in a way that a waitress in a coffee shop in Duluth is not going to be able to do. You're going to see a gap between the rural and the urban. You're going to see a bigger gap between Democrats and Republicans. You're going to see a gap between the post and the techies versus old school employment. You're going to see a gap between, you know, people who want to depend more on government versus people who are more independent risk takers, entrepreneurs, those kind of people. Some people are going to want to open their states faster. Other people are going to say, no, we got to be more careful. It's going to be a really wild divide in the country that's going to get exacerbated by this. That's my prediction.
And you're not alone, of course. I think we're going to be changed as people and as a world. We're lovers and family members are suffering, and also with separations because borders have closed. I heard one say, the last thing I want to do is put my kid on a plane to go visit the other parent, and then others. So we've got just lots of suffering and choices. Do I send my child on a play date or not? Do I risk that? How do I meet a potential suitor? There's so many changes because all of these changes and these decisions may become matters of life and death, and that is overwhelming for lots of people.
Well, when you talk about new mating habits, you know, so much of it having shifted to the internet anyway. I mean, it's estimated that, you know, a third to a half of all relationships in America nowadays start up over the internet. That's been well known for a long time. So a lot of people have been sort of dependent upon that. I got to assume that for the pure hookup sites, you know, the Tinders and whatever, the, you know, the sort of one night stand type of site. I've never done, you know, internet anything dating wise. You know, from what I understand, and I had to do some research on it on my books, that, you know, the Ashley Madison, a site for repair, for affairs, like you say, affairs are going to be tough. Hookup sites for, you know, where it's just based upon one night only for sex, I got to assume that that's got to drop off. It's probably going to be good for Match.com and, you know, the more serious ones where people are looking for serious qualities in their mate. It's going to be good for good communicators because, like I say, you're just going to have to be, you know, tapping out, you know, serious thoughts and sentiments on your keyboard rather than just grabbing each other physically. So it's going to probably be horrible for conventional in-person meetings. I mean, you know, how do you, if you meet somebody, you know, you got somebody you want to try and ask out, you know, well, why don't I take you to dinner? Oops, no restaurants. Let's go see a movie. Oh, we can't go to that. You know, how do you even start a new relationship? It's crazy.
Oh, it is crazy. And you know, I've heard some couples quip that their marriages might not survive a quarantine. And it's true for some people. Mandatory self-isolation with a spouse or an ex can be downright dangerous, as we've already alluded to, because of domestic violence. And so lots of changes. I mean, monogamy right now is the way to go. And
it may come back into vogue. Who knows? Yeah.
Yeah, somebody to be with and somebody to hold hands with and somebody to have really good sex with, which is what a small book that actually my husband and I are working on right now, Love in the Time of Corona. And
it's a great title, by the way. That's clever.
Yeah, well, thank you, yeah. It's some people.
It's a play on the old Love in the Time of Cholera, right?
Exactly right.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly right. And so there are things that couples can do, but right now we're talking about some of the downsides. And you've already posited that good communication is essential. And, of course, that's throughout your book, Divorce with Decency, which is now in its fifth edition? Fifth?
Count them, five, yeah. I realized that book first came out in 1998. So I've written five versions of it, and it's been out for 22 years, which must mean that I'm 22 years older. I can't quite do that math, but yeah.
I know. And I've said this when you've been on the program before, but the way that I met you was that I saw an article, because at the time I was living in Hawaii with Charlie, my late husband. And there was an article in the Honolulu Advertiser showing your picture, your handsome smiling face, and that you'd written this book, Divorce with Decency, just out. It was just out then. And first edition. And since my show was all about, at the time, I guess my show was called 50 and Fabulous or
fabulous.
Something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, right, yeah.
Yeah, and so under that umbrella, I could do a lot of different kinds of shows, but quality of life and divorce with decency. And then, so then I brought you on the show. I had you on my show in Hawaii numerous times. And then since I've been on PRN, it's been 10 years now, and you've been on numerous times, I think the most often. But today's, because of the pandemic, today's messages are a little more sobering. And that's part of what we need to do is to be realistic. And but we also need to think about there are possibilities to with small baby steps, maybe, one, be in the present. That helps a lot of people with their anxiety, to be in the present, not to be in the future, because that increases a lot more anxiety. I mean, people can't help it, but I'm just saying the ideal. Or to be in the past, which is often depressing. If you think about the past and things you won't have anymore.
Be in the present. I like that. That's good.
Mm-hmm. It's really important, and it's important for good sex, too. We're not going to talk about good sex necessarily today, but to be in the moment.
I don't think I've ever been on a show with you where you don't talk about sex somewhere along the line. Are you losing your touch?
Well, it's my thing. It's what I do.
It is what you
and
do.
And I'm counting my blessings, and I know you are, too. We talked a little bit because we have good, solid relationships, and we can quarantine in two places. I mean, I'm, as you know, and as I've shared on the program, my husband and I do the Living Apart Together business, LAT, and so we see each other Wednesdays and weekends, and it works out really well. And then working on this book together, it's given us a sense of purpose, and that's been important. And somebody to hold. You know, I talked to some of my single clients about this. Just they are longing to be hugged. Who can hug them? And so I talk about hugging yourself. Well, you know, putting your arms in front of your chest and just grabbing each side. But that isn't anything that it helps, but it isn't like having a real hug, which can help bring our blood pressure down and everything else. It's just so comforting. It's very hard for lots of people that don't have. You know, I'm counting my blessings, but I'm also very compassionate about how many people are really suffering with this, really, really suffering. And, I feel a little helpless, but we do what we can do, and we can help where we can help, right?
Oh, I think you've done a lot of good for a lot of people over the years. Like I say, the three causes of relationships freaking out: money, sex, and family. And especially for males, if you can fix the sex component of it, you can really save relationships. Because sex has been shown to be more important to men than it is to women. What a surprise! Yeah, not an average. You're not the average woman. For you, it's more important than anything. But for a lot of women, they fade out on sex, and guys try to keep going. So you've done a fantastic job of keeping the high touch physical aspect of relating, not just sex, but I mean just all aspects of it. You know, you're so smart about what's your favorite hormone? Oxytocin, the cuddle hormone that you like to talk about. I remember hearing you say that many times.
Well, my favorite hormone is really, oxytocin is a cuddle chemical. It's called the anti-divorce. It's a neurotransmitter, but it's really
oxytocin?
Important, and it's expressed a lot more when we are having hot sex, and it is expressed really fully with orgasm. And people are calmed down when they can get together and have and have sex and talk about it and set a date for it. You know, setting a date for sex, now we've got to do it in our home. We used to have date nights out, but we can do it in our home. It's a little more challenging when you have small children. It's a lot more challenging when you have small children. But certainly setting a date for sex is important. And then setting the scene and doing all of those things. And really, I have a lot of exercises that help people get to know each other better, because sometimes this quarantine can help people get to know each other better. And one of the exercises that I like is, and this comes under the heading of communication, and it's the talking stick exercise. And it obliges you to really understand what your partner is trying to communicate. So this is where, if you're holding the talking stick, it can be a pen. But if you're holding this talking stick, that means you have the floor, and your partner needs to really listen. And you talk for a couple of minutes, one topic. Don't stay with one topic, and then the other person needs to say what he or she heard you saying. And this could be very helpful. And then the other person doesn't get the floor until the person who had the talking stick feels completely understood. The ability to really understand what your partner is saying is so important, and I think that's why arguments are euphemistically called misunderstandings. They don't really get what you were saying. They're not really listening. So if people can slow down, and if you're quarantined and you've got problems, you might try that talking stick exercise and try to understand, agree on a single topic, as I said. And so just do it until you have enough clarification of the interchange, back and forth, until you're satisfied that your partner really understands what you want to communicate. That's really, really important.
That's an interesting assessment, and I don't know if you realize it, but you're right in line with you could be the Margaret Mead anthropologist of Polynesian cultures. You know, I used to live and work out in Micronesia, and I've done a lot of stuff all over Polynesia, and they actually have the passing of the talking stick in a lot of those cultures. And in Samoa, yes, you have the talking chief, and that actually is literally how some of those societies function.
It has origins, this exercise, in the Aboriginal cultures. And talk more about when you were there yourself. This was a part of the people, wasn't it, when you were there?
Well, I was on the staff of attorneys that actually wrote the constitution for the emerging nation of Micronesia. So that was back in the 70s, mid-70s. That was a whole century ago, dear. But I wanted to go back to something else that you mentioned when you were talking about how you and Brian, your husband, have lived in two separate residences and then get together a couple of times a week. And it's going to be interesting. Another outgrowth of this love in the time of Corona is going to be very interesting in the way actual habitation styles lay out, because it's going to force people, obviously, into a huge increase in multi-generational households. And, you know, and when we hit the recession of 2008 and 2009, the increase in multi-generational households, where the millennials move back into their parents' basements or they start taking care of grandparents or whatever, that went up 30% between 2001 and 2011. It's a direct result of economic hard times. When people are getting cocky, like by the 2011 census, for example, when we were coming out of that last recession, people who lived alone made up 28% of all U.S. households. You know how I like statistics.
Oh, yeah.
And there were nearly 33 million Americans living alone as their preferred choice. 80% of those over 50 were saying they were content with their singlehood and they were happy living alone. Women are much more likely to be happy living alone and single than are men. That is still a totally traceable statistic. So It's interesting to look at the percentages of exactly who in various countries prefers to live solo. And bear with me, there's a tie-in with all this. The country with the highest percentage of all households in the world, people living single, living alone of all the households, Sweden. 47% of people in Sweden live alone. Now, how does that tie in with the coronavirus? Because Sweden is the only Western country that has not locked down. They did not impose, if you watch the news, they didn't impose social distancing. They've got cafes and cinemas and everything else going, same as they always did. Several other European countries are starting to head that way. But it's kind of interesting, you know, if you look at that, what that kind of a characteristic trait that might be, it would be people who prefer independence. You know, the Nordic Germanic, you know, tribes in the far north, you know, they've always been viewed as being tougher because they've got to fight off weather and store all their nuts for the entire year and live in igloos and go out and fish for whales. And I don't know if you fish for whales or whatever, you know, but I mean, that the Nordic peoples have always been tougher. And Sweden, those tough Nordic folks, they're the highest ones that like to live alone. And they're the only ones that skip the coronavirus lockdown. Now, I don't know exactly what that means, but it's interesting the divergence between people that are willing to take responsibility, take risk, and try and just go it on their own must be a characteristic in some societies and being lost in other societies and other places. You know, we want a nanny state, and you know the middle of America wants to open up and take the risk and, you know, restart business. And other people are saying, no, we got to wait till government tells us it's okay. It's, you know, it's really, it's almost two different sets of mentalities. And I, you know, I'm not passing right or wrong on any of them, but it is interesting to see another divide that has been caused by this love in the time of Corona. People are handling it differently.
So that's so true. I wonder, that's a fascinating statistic about Sweden, 40% of people, 47% of people live alone.
47%, yeah.
So maybe it's that when you live alone, you're really self-sufficient, you're more comfortable, you certainly don't have, you're less likely to have, even if you have a partner, codependent relationships, the difference between want and need, I say, is that you look at your partner and you, or somebody that you're even dating, the difference between want and need is, I want you more than I need you. I can live without you, but I can live better with you. Well, some people say better with you, but just not every single day, if they can manage it. I mean, I think Brian and I are lucky that we can manage two households because it gives us some space, and we're being self-sufficient, we're being responsible, we're sheltering in place, we just have each other to touch and to love and to have sex with, but we're being very responsible, so maybe there's some of that. What do you think about living, what do you think are some of the other reasons that Sweden didn't get a lockdown? I mean, it's a little hard to figure it out, but
it's interesting. I really don't know what to make of it, except for, like you say, it must be a independent, self-sufficient streak that some of those Nordic people have. I've always been and this is way off topic, but I've always been a believer in the fact that demographics is destiny. You live in Hawaii like I do, and you know, you go out and sit on the beach and a coconut falls off a tree and you pick it and eat it, or you pull up a pineapple or whatever. and I've lived in these tropical climates for a long time, you know, before long, you tend to get a little more relaxed, borderline lazy about life. Whereas if you're, you know, an Eskimo and you got 3 months of daylight and you got to, you know, store all, you got to catch all your food right then. You ever seen these guys that go out in these one-man kayaks? These are made out of animal hides and spear a whale. I mean, I'm going, holy shit, how can anybody even do this? And then you got to drag it back and, you know, chop up the blubber and store it in an igloo and make it through winter with, you know, 6 months of no daylight. You know, that creates a different mentality than, you know, than is, like I say, life in the tropics. So I guess the Nordic cultures have always just been tougher that way, and maybe that's what's going on in Sweden. It's interesting. But what I wanted to ask, and
I have a phrase. My first job out of college was teaching in Hawaii. I was living in California, went to school in California, and I remember feeling, oh, this is great living here. And it wasn't original, but I called it Polynesian paralysis, you know.
Yeah,
and the symptoms of Polynesian paralysis is you don't have a lot of ambition, and it's so sensual. You can enjoy the soft breeze and then the water around your body when you're swimming or surfing, and it's romantic too. It fosters romance. We got to get this world back again, and Hawaii needs to get it back again, because so many romantic good things have happened in Hawaii for people. But
it's certainly, if you can't fall in love when you're watching a Hawaiian sunset, you've got a problem, because it is a sweet spot. But you know, unfortunately, the world now is not in a very sweet spot. I don't know how much time we've got left to go, but I wanted to stress, and again, you sort of brought it up when you said, hey, you know, you and Brian are able to have two households and then go back and forth. I mean, that's because you worked hard all your life, and you were, you know, like me, you were born at a time where you could actually amass some wealth and property and whatever, but that's going to be really, really tough for the careers that are going to be delayed by these young kids. You know, you lose a couple of years and you lose all your money, and then it's tough to get started, and it's going to take a long time to get this economy back on track. So the gap between the haves and the have-nots, who are lucky to have, you know, the space to make love and shut the door, versus the ones that have got, you know, their three generations, you know, yelping at each other and sniveling kids and intruding the bedroom just when you're trying to get it on, that's going to be a problem. So you're going to see careers delayed. You're going to see the gap between the haves and the have-nots widen. You know, it's already a serious problem in that basically older, well-educated people are marrying one another, and the people whose education stopped at high school or shorter, you know, they've got higher divorce rates. People who are college-educated and can find other college-educated people on the Internet and marry them. You know, the gap is just going to continue to grow between the haves and the have-nots. And I think that's why you're seeing the people in middle America saying, hey, reopen the economy. We got to get a job. Whereas you're saying the people that are on the coast and on their computers and still have good incomes, you know, they're doing, you know, they're a little less freaked out by things. And then you're going to see marriages being delayed. I mean, marriage right now, the age for marriage for women is about 27 and for men about 29. And I bet this is going to push, you know, you can't get married, for Christ's sake. I bet, how many people do you know that have already canceled their marriage ceremonies literally because they can't even have a ceremony.
Exactly.
So you're looking at people delaying marriage probably to their early 30s. And that's going to mean probably a further drop in child. I don't know. Like I say, maybe we'll have corona babies, or maybe we'll have a further drop in an already declining birth rate. But these are going to be major structural changes in society that are going to come out of this. I mean, this is different than anything else we've ever faced, because this is an invisible enemy. You know, nobody knows when it stops. Nobody really knows how much worse it's going to get. Nobody knows whether you really develop a resistance to it or whether you get it a second time. Nobody knows what the denominator and how many people have really got it versus are asymptomatic, what the death rate is. Oh, my God. And, you know, and so there's logic on both sides of the issue as to how to deal with this thing. And then there's all kinds of emotion. So it's a scary situation.
Well, you are very articulate about this, Brad. It's so true. And, of course, anxiety is increased when we don't know stuff, when we can't predict. And there's so, just as you say, there's so much that we don't know about this. When will it end? Will it end? I think we're forever changed. And there's another piece of this that we haven't talked about, and that is many of us are grieving. We're grieving the loss of the old ways, if they were
yes.
good for us. And so they talk about the different stages of grief. The new stage, the fourth stage, may be, or the sixth stage, what is it? It's anyway, the last stage may be meaning. We're going to have more meaning. We're gonna reprioritize our what's really important to us, and that may not happen for a lot of people until they get past the huge stressors like not having a job, and worrying about rent and worrying about domestic violence, and there's so many real big problems, but. When we can slow down a little bit, and we're going to reprioritize, and I think we're going to treat people, including the first responders types, with much more respect. We already are, but with much more respect and understanding. I mean, all these people that are putting their lives on the line for the rest of us.
Unbelievable!
So, yeah.
Yeah. And the true heroes, for sure.
Yeah, I just, I was very briefly hospitalized a little over a year ago, and I guess I got on their call list, but a nurse from the hospital called me and said, how am I doing? Because I'm in, you know, that vulnerable age group since I'm in my 70s. And I said, I'm doing well. I can't talk to you for too long now because I've got a radio show coming up. And I said, But I said, I'm doing well, and I said, thank you for all you're doing. And she said, oh, you're welcome. And so just good people out there, good, good people. And
well, it's interesting.
Here's the music. You're a good person. Yeah, you're a good person, Brad. I'm so glad you're in my life. Thank you. Thanks. Aloha, everybody. Take care. Stay safe. Stay sane.